I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program is brought to you by Neil's Yard Dairy, selecting, maturing, and selling farmhouse cheese from the UK and Ireland. For more information, visit neilsyarddairy.co.uk.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. This week's guest is Liz Thorpe, author of The Book of Cheese, The Essential Guide to Discovering Cheeses You'll Like, Love. Welcome, Liz.
Like and love. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're very welcome. It's great to see you again.
I know.
How long have you been gone from New York?
3 years ago this past month.
Oh, okay.
September of 2014, I moved.
Okay, so you left Murray's first and then left New York later.
Correct. I left Murray's in 2012, and then New York in 2014.
Mm-hmm. How do you like New Orleans?
I love it, but you don't say it that way.
Oh
tisk tisk.
Oh, how do
New
you say
Orleans?
It?
Or,
oh, okay.
No, some of the locals say it New Orleans in this way that I feel very. It's like when I say howdah instead of gouda. It's like technically correct, but I feel silly saying it. So yeah, New Orleans, and
okay.
I love it. It's great, mm-hmm. And actually, there's like a very weird Brooklyn New Orleans connection mm-hmm. happening right now. So
oh,
in
cool.
many ways, it's like
your home.
It's Brooklyn South. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, congratulations on the book. It's quite a tome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a big book. I'm like, it better be, man. It took a long time to make it to the light of day. So,
well, it's big, it's long, and it's serious.
Yes.
It's even scholarly.
It was meant to be. Well, it was meant to be the definitive book.
Mm-hmm,
I officially have nothing left to say about cheese. I have written three. I technically co-authored my first book on cheese, the Murray's Cheese Handbook, and then mm-hmm. I wrote the Cheese Chronicles, and then I wrote the Book of Cheese. So
mm-hmm.
that's a lot of talk about cheese.
Well, the Chronicles were different than this book.
They were. But I guess like this was it. It was going to be my last one. It was going to be big. It was going to be good. No, and I wanted it to be...
Well, you might have something more to say in 10 years.
Maybe.
There'll be new
but
cheeses.
But hopefully... I mean, actually, no, to be sort of like with all very deep and due respect to Mr. Stephen Jenkins, who wrote Cheese Primer,
mm-hmm.
which was the book that got me into cheese,
mm-hmm.
Back in 2001,
mm-hmm.
and it was published in 96. But that's still a book that I... People say, like, what's the one book I buy? Not about pairing, not about cheese place, but just,
mm-hmm.
like, because I want to learn about cheese. And I say, like...
It's a great reference book.
I say Cheese Primer, but it's, like, now it's 20 years old.
Right.
So,
right.
Anyway, so this is hopefully the new one.
Okay, so first I want to ask, let's talk about how the idea developed. Is this the book you set out to write?
It is, very much. I actually, like, yes, I had the idea...
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the outline for the book years ago.
Okay. When do you think you started it? How many years ago?
Well, I mean, it's really like, it's how I learned to sell cheese over 15 years of working in cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been forming for all that time. But I mean, I signed the contract to write this book like 4 years ago.
Okay.
And at that time, I knew I had this concept and I knew I wanted to kind of restructure how people understood cheese. And I had this idea of the gateway cheeses. So
mm-hmm.
I'd say at least 4 years.
Okay. Now, I was going to ask, when did you develop your gateway concept? And can you explain it simply for our listeners?
Yeah. I mean, I would say truly, like, I was using this idea to sell cheese on the counter at Murray's Cheese in 2003.
Okay. When you first started working.
At that time, I didn't have a nice, neat little phrase for it. But when I started working in cheese on the counter, this was how I learned to sell cheese. And so the sort of like the elevator pitch is that I believe there are a handful of common, very general cheese names that most people are familiar with, mm-hmm. and that we can use I now call those the gateway cheeses, and that those can be used to map out the entire world of cheese. So mm-hmm. the way that you can take people from what they know to what they don't yet know is by starting with this common, very general jumping off point. So cheese is like cheddar, Swiss, blue, mm-hmm. That like everybody knows. Mm-hmm. You can take that and you can get people to Pleasant Ridge Reserve or mm-hmm. Alplock or, mm-hmm. you know, something that they
wherever
may,
you want to take them.
They may have never mm-hmm. heard of. Yeah.
But it's very different because most of the cheese books use different categorizations.
Yeah, totally. And all of my other books, like, I mean, I've been struggling with how to categorize cheese my whole career because mm-hmm. as a sort of dutiful, nerdy person, I mm-hmm. like the technicalities, but that is not helpful to a consumer. Mm-hmm. So those of us who are like in the biz like to debate the merits of, you know, soft ripened versus bloomy rind. But if you're a person who's standing in a store trying to buy cheese for your party or your kid's lunch, mm-hmm. you don't care. You don't have time. And you just want, you know, you need an easy access point. Mm-hmm. So I believe that the way we change how people eat is to meet people where they are.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever frightened by what a big undertaking this book was?
Oh, that's an interesting question. No, not really, because I've always written. Writing is something I enjoy, and honestly, like the book kind of wrote itself.
That was one of my questions. Did the book, which parts I mean, wrote itself, wrote themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I agonized, like Cheese Chronicles, I had much more agony over writing. This mm-hmm. book was really like, put my head down and do the work. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think like I really had this framework to hang it on. So mm-hmm. it was just a lot of tasting and note taking.
Mm-hmm. Now you, to people who haven't seen the book yet, every chapter, which is a gateway, which we'll discuss later, includes also the availability and intensity chart.
Yep.
Do you want to describe that?
Yep. So, there's a gateway cheese and I use that to, you know, as a gateway into 20 or 30 or 40 cheeses that are mm-hmm. of a similar flavor profile. So mm-hmm. this book for me is really about flavor because again, I think consumers and eaters are less interested in the technicalities. They know they like the taste of something or they don't like the taste of something. So I really key off of flavor in this mm-hmm. book. And so I have found in all my tasting over all my years in cheese that there's, similar flavors that correspond to each gateway. And mm-hmm. I kind of rank those in intensity on a scale of 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. So for example, an approachable or a mild brie type mm-hmm. might taste like milk or cream, but in an intense brie type tastes like cooked cruciferous vegetable, like cauliflower and broccoli. Mm-hmm. So there's a spectrum of flavor, but there's always going to be milky buttery notes. That's like throughout the whole mm-hmm. group. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of availability, is it something you can buy in any supermarket, very readily available, or is it a hyper obscure cheese you can only mail order from maybe one or two places mm-hmm. around the country? Because mm-hmm. again, and I will say leaving New York has been really mind blowing for me because New Yorkers,
we're spoiled.
Y'all take advantage. You take for granted what you have and you forget that it's not like that everywhere
right.
else. So, you know, I wanted to focus this book on cheeses that were going to be pretty readily available on a national scale.
So she has a chart on every gateway that goes from mellow to intense on the bottom and then goes up in terms of how hard it is to find the cheese.
Yeah, and I like it because it's just kind of, it's like a double page spread. And so if there's one cheese on that double page spread, like one out of 40 that you know that you like, then you can immediately see all the cheeses that are right around it. And those are going to be all the cheeses that are closest to it in flavor. And like, chances are you're going to love all of those as well. It's just a helpful, I'm visual that way.
Right. And then you have for each chapter an explanation of the particular gateway and your ideas, how you developed it.
Yeah, I like, again, because I'm a writer and I like writing. So every chapter has an essay and it's sort of like, why is this a gateway cheese for me?
Or the story
what's
behind.
The story or sort of like what was the moment where, you know, I had some experience that really like changed how I thought about that cheese. That's the sort of like, if you want to read more personal stuff, great. And if you want to skip those two pages, you won't lose any necessary information.
Okay. Then comes the chapter guide that has important facts, pretty much.
Yes. That's where you get all the FAQs out of the way.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Because everybody always asks us, and I say us because I assume there's lots of cheese folks who listen to the show, but like, do I eat the rind? How long is it good for in my refrigerator? You know, like, what is a bloomy rind? What does that mean? Why does it look that way? You know, so I get all that out of the way. And those things applied to the entire chapter. So like, I don't want to be repeating that stuff over and over again.
Then you have a section on textures and that flavor wheel.
Yeah.
Now, that flavor wheel was a bit daunting for me.
Yeah. There's a lot of words on there. I'm like, blame the Comte people. No. So again, this book for me is really about, it is about taste. It's about flavor because I think that's really what people care about. And one of the things that I find delightful but kind of presumptuous and annoying about cheese is talking about what it tastes like. Because, again, when I get in a room of, like, regular people, it's intimidating to them that we say it's like stone and minerals and all this stuff. And people are sort of like, well, like, I don't know what that means.
We have too many fancy words.
Yeah, like, that's what makes cheese feel less accessible. So I wanted to define what are the flavors and aromas that are likely to be found in the world of cheese, and then which ones apply to each gateway. So, like, when you're in the Brie gateway, there's lots of lactic aromas and smells and lots of fungal aromas and smells. And, like, there's not a lot of, you know, fruity smells and tastes. So it kind of, and again, it's all subjective, right? But to me, it's sort of like, here's the ballpark of flavor and aroma that you're going to be in. And I was joking about the Comte people, but Comte has this amazing graphic that they use, and it's all the flavors and aromas that can possibly apply just to that one cheese. So I took that idea as inspiration, but for the world of cheese. And then turned it on or turned it off depending on the chapter.
Okay, so you're that's new. You invented those words.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, it got edited down many times, so it could have been much more intimidating.
I think that won't be a page that the newcomers focus on.
No, I mean, that's true. I feel like that's why this is a book, like, it's meant for anyone who loves cheese and is interested, but also there's stuff in there that I feel like I really put in there for the, if not for the industry, then at least for, like, the hardcore
cheese for people
nerds
who want to learn how to sell.
Yeah, yeah, and actually I've gotten a lot of, I've heard a lot from people who sell cheese who have found it helpful, which is awesome.
Good. So then comes the long list of included cheeses in the category.
Yep.
And there's a short blurb on the side of the page and a longer blurb describing them.
Yes, again, because I like to give choices. So you want to read the full paragraph, settle in and read it. If you want, like, what does it taste like? What's the texture? In a few words or less, how do you describe it? So you get the short and the long.
Now, and you have an in short category where you just it's a phrase.
Yes.
Sometimes a word, sometimes a phrase. Some are very funny. Some are specific.
Yeah. Some are more earnest. Some are less earnest.
Weren't those hard sometimes?
They were. They were really hard.
Once you decided to do it, you had to do it for all cheeses.
And it's like when you're in a chapter with 40 cheeses that are all essentially like, they're not the same, but they're really similar. That's why they're all in the same chapter. So I'd come up with one really good one. And then I was like, well, that kind of applies to like the next six cheeses, but I can't repeat it.
Right, right.
So, yeah, that was hard. There was a little creative push-pull there.
Yeah, I could almost imagine like, oh, this was a mistake. Like, I should not have done this.
I'm like, I drink when I write. Not a lot, but like, you know, I have like I always have a drink when I write, and that helps. Loosens everything up a bit.
Then at the end, before we're not done with the chapter yet, even the Havarti chapter is 35 pages.
That's right.
There's a bunch of your special picks and tastings to do that will be educational and pairings. So you have everything in this book.
Yeah. Well, I wanted it to be definitive, right? So, you know, but again, it's like, I'm a generalist. So the pairings, I love the flavor and aroma wheel, and I love the pairings approach because there are a lot of books out there that are focused on cheese pairing, cheese and something. Mm-hmm. And what I always find frustrating about that is like, if you don't have that particular cheese and that particular wine, the pairing, you can't do the pairing. And also it's like sort of the rationale behind the pairing is very specific and it's very prescriptive. And I wanted to be more general and basically say, here are the types of flavors you're going to encounter and here are the types of pairings that are going to work. And here's why, so that you feel like you have some flexibility there. Mm-hmm. It could be any cheese on the approachable end of the flavor spectrum.
Right. Right. And you can try anything and who cares if it doesn't totally work?
Yeah. And it's just like, it doesn't have to be this vineyard and this vintage. It could just be this, you know, this grape and this style. Mm-hmm. So,
Okay. Now, what parts did you work on first? What were the hardest parts?
The parts I worked on first. So, I mean, the parts I worked on first were the descriptions, because there's like, I don't even, you might have counted or something, but there's like hundreds of cheeses in the book. So I was kind of just, the descriptions are the descriptions, and I was working on those from day one. And that to me is like the put your head down and get it done stuff. Mm-hmm.
And some of them you had probably done before.
Yes.
Or had an outline.
I mean, certainly, like, yes, I've written God's plenty of cheese descriptions in my life. So so that was kind of just like, you got to be working on it throughout. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I would say the hardest part was deciding what my 9 gateway cheeses were and then deciding what cheeses were going to go in what gateways. And it, for like 85% of them, it was very obvious to me. But then for 15% of them, there was a lot of like tasting and going back and forth and sort of rejiggering things. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that was challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. How long did the book take? How many hours a week did you work?
I mean, the process of making a book is quite slow. So the writing was about a year and a half, but the actual production of the book was like 3 years. And I mean, how much time did I spend on it? I don't know. I didn't keep track. I mean, I was, you know, I wrote some every day, 5 days a week. But you know, I did a ton of work before I moved from Brooklyn. And there was a group of people, a New York based group of cheese people who are all incredibly smart, talented people. And they did I did a lot of group tastings with them kind of before I wrote anything. And that was so, I mean,
did they like the gateways?
Do that with your friends. They did like the gateways, but I think that the general reservation that cheese people have to this concept is that it's like too dumbed down, you know? And they were kind of resistant to like to that level of grouping. But my experience has been very all over the country. And I just, this for me was a book for people who were afraid of cheese, but loved it and wanted to sort of be less afraid. And so that I hung on firmly to this concept and I love it. And I'm really into it.
Now, before we get to the actual gateways, how did you ever even select which cheeses to include in the book?
That's a really good question.
You have some obvious ones, like Montgomery cheddar and burrata, let's say. You have some I've never heard of or have not tasted yet, like Viamala and Coraline and Bunt Corners, I don't know. And then you have some old friends like Pota Classico and Leti Vaz. I mean, you know, who I haven't eaten or seen recently, but who I was, my mouth would water when I came across old friends.
Oh, yes. It's like that dress in the back of my closet I forgot about. So that's a really good question. And there's no, well, no, I shouldn't say there's no rhyme or reason to it. The biggest criteria for me about what to include was I wanted the book to be primarily cheese. First of all, it's written for an American audience.
Okay.
So I wanted it to be focused on cheeses that most Americans would be able to find relatively easily.
Okay.
That was my biggest criteria. So this book also includes things like Jarlsberg.
It does.
Which, like, I'll be the first person to say, like, I don't eat Jarlsberg. I don't particularly like it. But I would be remiss to exclude it because it is a tremendously important cheese in the landscape of cheese retail in this country. And the number of consumers who only know Jarlsberg as like a Swiss cheese, even though it's not actually, you know, made in Switzerland. It's like that is the reference point for thousands of shoppers. So like I wanted it there. And in the book, I say I don't particularly like this cheese, and I think there are many better cheeses for your money. But I'm not going to leave it out because that's where a lot of people are starting. So I wanted it to be primarily nationally available cheeses. And then,
so that makes it go down on the availability scale.
Yeah, because I also, like, I don't want a book that's full of stuff that you can only mail order from two places. Like, that doesn't, that I don't think that's helpful for most people. So, And then there were cheeses that, you know, again, it's interesting because now that I'm based in New Orleans, like my tasting was done. My local independent shop is called St. James Cheese Company. They're an amazing retailer. They have a great selection. It's very, it's constantly changing. But they, for example, have a really deep selection of southern regional cheeses that many of which you don't see up in the Northeast. And so my exposure to that was greater, and there's probably more of that than there would have been if I had been writing in New York. It's weak. It's weakest, I would say, on the West Coast, Pacific Northwest, in terms of like the regional cheeses that don't really leave the West Coast, because that's not an area where I've spent a huge amount of time tasting and working. So it's influenced by my own biases
And shopping.
And shopping.
Where you shop.
And then there were cheeses that I just, there are cheeses that I think are exceptionally well-made, important cheeses that are not very readily available, but I think you've got to, I think you have to talk about them when you talk about the world of cheese, like a cheese like Solaire's or a cheese like Etivas, or a cheese like, there's a Tennessee creamery called Sequatchie Cove that I think is, they're making some of the best cheeses right now in the United States. And, you know, you can't find them easily, but I wanted to talk about them because I think they're so good and important. So, you know, so it's, in that sense, it becomes pretty subjective. But, you know, I will also say the process of making a book is really slow and you can't, what's maddening to me is like you hit a point where your editorial team won't let you make any changes.
And so new cheeses might be
like,
coming.
For me with this book, that my opportunity to make changes ended a year ago. So stuff changes in our industry. And like you know,
you couldn't put
it
in.
I couldn't necessarily react to changes that were happening. So that's, you know.
Okay. I thought maybe you also did it on the intensity scale, that you wanted to go from mild to intense in a category and have a place everywhere on the continuum.
No, that's definitely true. I wanted to have sort of a fair representation, but my problem was more that I had more than I could include, and I had to winnow it down.
Right. Yeah. It's time for us to take a break. We're on Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. I'm talking to Liz Thorpe on her book, The Book of Cheese.
Today's program is brought to you by Neil's Yard Dairy. Neil's Yard Dairy selects, matures, and sells farmhouse cheese from the UK and Ireland. They work with about 40 cheesemakers, they visit them regularly to taste their cheese, and select the batches they want to mature and sell. Amongst the cheeses they select, there is a great deal of variability. Cheese can change hugely depending on how it's treated. They have a range of temperature and humidity-controlled maturation facilities at their warehouse in London, run by a team who are dedicated to ensuring that they sell their cheese at its best. As the cheese is maturing, they continue to taste through the stock to ensure they're aware of how it is developing over time. When the cheese is ready, their attention turns to directing the right cheese into the hands of the right customer. They have three cheese shops in London, an online shop, and they're a regular site at markets around the country, and have a UK and international wholesale trade. For more information, visit neilsyarddairy.co.uk.
Hi, we're back from the break on Cutting the Curd. Diane Stemple talking to Liz Thorpe about her book. And now we're going to talk about the gateway system of categorizing cheese with the hopes of helping customers find what they like. Correct? That's how you would...
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I'm like, this started, as I said, when I worked on the counter and I found people would come in and look at 350 cheeses and they didn't know and I didn't know, right? Because I had just started working chili. I didn't know what the 300 cheeses were.
Right.
So I would say, what do you like?
Mm-hmm.
And they would say cheddar, or I hate blue, or anything but goat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the gateways Liz has chosen are mozzarella, brie, Havarti, Taleggio, Manchego, which makes me think of Cielo saying, the cheese that starts with an M, cheddar, Swiss, Parmesan, Blue, and the Misfits.
Yes.
So first of all, cheese snob of me and in me rebels against the use of Havarti.
Okay.
Why Havarti?
That's a great question. I'll before I answer your question, I will tell you that I play a game with my non-food friends.
Okay.
Where I say, you know, when I was writing the book, where I would say, can you guess the 9 gateway cheeses?
Okay.
And usually people would get 7 or 8 of them, but Havarti was often the one that they didn't get. So here's the answer.
Interesting.
Here's the answer to why Havarti is a gateway cheese.
Okay.
Because it was gonna be the Gouda gateway.
Okay.
But young Gouda and aged Gouda are so radically different in terms of flavor and texture that, in my opinion, they might as well be two different cheeses. If you're selling red wax Gouda to someone for $6.99 a pound, or you're selling, you know, a 2-year aged La Muse Gouda, it happens to both be Gouda, but otherwise, in name only, are they similar?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in this book, aged Gouda is in the Parmesan gateway.
Yes, that's
so
another question I have.
I couldn't have a Gouda gateway.
Right.
And
okay.
then have the Goudas in two different places.
That's a good answer. I eliminated
my problem by making it the Havarti gateway.
Okay.
And young Gouda is in that,
right.
is in
but
that
you
chapter.
You say Havarti is sexy somewhere in this book.
It is, because none of us cheese people, we don't eat pedestrian boring, basic things like Havarti, but if you eat, I mean, sit down with a piece of room temperature Havarti.
I will like it.
Of good double cream room temperature Havarti. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I think I say in the book, it's like a baby's thigh. It's like that sexy, like little bit of that, like the sexy roll on your waist. It's squishy and it's buttery. It's got a little bit of a tang. The cheeses in that gateway melt like a dream. I mean, they're not complex. Mm-hmm. You know, a Havarti is not like a mind-blowingly complex cheese, but it doesn't purport to be, and it doesn't cost mind-blowingly complex prices. So, mm-hmm.
Okay, so some comments on the categories. Manchego, I do agree with you that it's gone in the 15 years we've been in the cheese business, it's gone from being somewhat unique to being a very regular cheese.
Totally. When I remember, Diane, I won't date us. but when we started, you know, in the cheese business at Murray's in 2002, we had a young Manchego and an aged Manchego. And that was like radical. I mean, it was like, there was like a 4 month one and an 8 month one. And then, mm-hmm. and then we got one that was in oil. And
it yes, was like, I remember
then there
the
were
oil.
Three Manchegos and people would come in and be like, what is this like exotic cheese? And now it's sort of, I mean,
it's everywhere.
I mean, God, don't talk about Manchego in New York. People will kick you out of their houses because you're so boring. but then when I started working in opening Murray's shops in Dayton, Ohio with Kroger in 2007, and no one had heard of Manchego, and I gave people a taste, and it was the first time they'd ever had a sheep milk cheese. Mm-hmm. And they were like, this is really good. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, it is. You know, it's fat and it's a little sweet and it, you know, put quince paste on it. And people were like,
whoa,
mind blown. So, you know, all in due time.
Okay. And I am surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised taste-wise, but I'm surprised brain-wise to find the aged Goudas in the Parmesan category.
Yes.
How did you decide that? Did you...
This is the answer to every question about this book. Because when I take cheese to a party and I put it on the table and regular people gather... Regular people, because we
regular
all cheese people.
People.
We're like architects. We all like hang out together too much.
Right.
So you put it on the table for regular people, and they all go, "Oh my God, this is like, is this Parmesan? This is so good." And I say, "No, it's not. It's aged Gouda." Oh, I've had Gouda before. Like, this isn't Gouda. So it's really, I mean, it's crunchy. It's crystallized. Mm-hmm. You chunk it up. It's mm-hmm. got, you know, nutty butterscotchy notes. And to someone who's not well versed in cheese, it's very, it looks a lot like Parmesan.
Okay, now the misfits.
Yeah.
I was shocked to find the soft ripened goats in the misfits category.
Yeah.
They should have their own category.
What else would be in it?
Maybe they could be by themselves.
But then I feel like that's not helpful.
It's too small a category?
Well, because most people don't walk into a cheese shop and say, I'd really like something that's like Seltzer Share, please. I mean, again, maybe they do like in a few shops in San Francisco, Chicago, and New York, but they don't, it's not a common, it's like, that's rarely where people start.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, and also they're not, they're, you know, again, like technically speaking, yes, they are mold ripened. Yes, they are soft ripened, but they're not, they don't look like Brie and they don't taste like Brie.
No,
and that's really the thing people know.
Okay.
They look weird. They look like brains. They're like green and blue. You know, they're just sort of like, what is this? They don't belong.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk about some of the categories. Which are your favorites? Which would you like to talk about first?
I mean, my favorites, like I'm well on record that soft, stinky cheeses are my favorites. So mm-hmm. the intense end of the flavor spectrum in the Brie gateway, mm-hmm. Mid to intense in the Taleggio gateway. Mm-hmm. Those are my favorite. Those are the cheeses I buy like when I'm just buying cheese to eat for dinner.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Taleggio gateway. So you start with Gubin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was stronger.
Well, I mean, yeah. So... That is something I should have said way in the beginning when you asked me what was hard about this. And I realized after all these years, I forgot to actually say this anywhere in the book, but wine people have it easy because wine may change from vintage to vintage, but that means you're covered for an entire year where everything that's made is going to be the same for that year. Mm. And cheese
is more variable.
I mean, it's not only more variable, but it's like everyone along the supply chain can change it.
That's true.
For better or more likely for worse.
Right.
So, you know, that was a hard thing about the book because I did tie a cheese to a flavor intensity. Mm-hmm. And I would say like this is an example of sort of a milder, more approachable Taleggio style. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, you can have that cheese and it can be not mild. Right. It can be really intense, especially if it's older. Mm-hmm. But this was basically like every cheese in this book I tasted multiple times, often from multiple sources, and then I cross-referenced all my notes. Okay. So this was sort of my best attempt to peg something.
Okay. And then in the middle of the Taleggio category is Isabella, which I don't know. Mm-hmm. Where's...
From Ancient Heritage, yeah.
Okay.
It was like one of the West Coasters who made it in.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting because I had that in a completely different chapter.
Mm-hmm.
I tasted it. We used to sell it at Murray's, and then I tasted it out at the California Artisan Cheese Festival a few years ago, and I sort of like a couple of different places. And
it went from which category? Where did it come from?
I think I had it in the
Brie.
No, I had it in Brie. Yes.
Oh, okay.
And then it was like, and then the last couple of times I tasted it, it was much more washed, rindy. Mm-hmm. It was very olivey. It was very briny. It was totally different from my like previous impressions of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in that category, you sort of start with like the yeasty, doughy, briny flavor profile, and you move into more of like cured meat, saucisson sec flavor. Mm-hmm. And then the intense end of that spectrum winds up like at a cheese, maybe like great Meadow Creek Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
That
was your last cheese.
Yeah.
One category. Now, and I thought, I don't remember it being that strong.
Yeah.
Can it vary or do you get it closer?
I mean, I think because there are so few raw milk cheeses left in that style, I find, and again, remember, I mean, I guess for me, intensity isn't necessarily like strong, like the most stinky. It's the most intense, like the most complex, the most lingering, the most full of flavor.
Okay.
It's kind of like the culmination of a chapter.
That makes more sense to me.
Doesn't necessarily have to mean it's like the most ass kicking.
Okay. But it's quite a compliment.
Yeah.
From you.
Yeah. And I mean, every time I tasted Grayson, I mean, it is one, like, but I'm biased. It's one of my favorite cheeses, but it had so many flavor layers and it really just was, to me, it was sort of the apex of what this style could be. Mm-hmm. And every time I tasted it at different ages. Mm-hmm. So it wound up at a 10.
Mm-hmm. Now I wonder also, when did you fall in love with American cheese? Do you remember? Because I feel like at Murray's we weren't too American in the beginning.
Oh, really? I feel like I remember it. So I remember that in the beginning, Murray's, in the beginning, like 02, 03, 04, we were carrying American cheeses, even though most of them were really bad. And they were. They were not good, and they were really expensive. And we carried them because it was important.
Right.
And because we were a full service cheese shop, we could hand sell cheese in a way that maybe other shops couldn't. And we could like push them out to the right person.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I remember tasting Cato Corner Hooligan at Green Market, the New York City Farmers Market. It was before I worked at Murray's. So it was probably 2000 or 2001. And I remember, and it is a Taleggio, it's in the Taleggio Gateway. It's a washed rind cow's milk cheese. I remember thinking it was the most profoundly delicious, mind-blowing food I had ever had. Mm-hmm. And coming in when I started working at Murray's, which I did part-time in the beginning, and saying, like, there's this cheese that, like, I've discovered that no one, you know, that you don't know about that we have to sell here, and it's this cheese. And everyone behind the counter was like, you idiot. Like, that cheese, it's, like, so inconsistent. It's so expensive. We're not going to sell that cheese here. And I remember thinking, like, we're missing the boat on this great thing. That's the first time I remember really thinking, like, mm-hmm. And actually, the other thing is that the cheese that made me truly quit my job and go work in cheese was Judy Shad's, and I probably still to this day pronounce it wrong. If I don't know if it's Wabash or Wabash, but her Cannonball.
Oh, I call it Wabash
Cannonball. Wabash. See, we should ask Judy what the correct pronunciation
is. Isn't it a city, Wabash?
Probably. Mm-hmm. But I had that cheese at Artisanal, the restaurant, in 2000. Mm-hmm. When I was just starting to fall in love with the idea of cheese and that cheese. And again,
I don't think it was open in 2000. I think it opened in 2001. Yeah.
I was still with my college boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
So it had, I could tell you the date that ended, but, he took me on a date there and we had that cheese and it was so good on the cheese board that I bought one to take home.
At that time,
I didn't know that it was an American cheese and that was a big deal. Right. I just remember thinking, like...
And you didn't know it was your future life.
I wanted it to be, but I didn't have the guts at that point yet to make it my life.
Uh-huh. Well, I want to thank you for coming in.
Oh, thanks.
We haven't had a chance to discuss all the categories, but they're great.
It's a big book. So.
It is a big book. It's heavy.
It's got really nice pictures in it.
Do you think it will? It does.
Yeah,
very nice pictures. Do you think it will ever be paperback?
I have no idea. These are the sort of the mysteries of the publishing industry. I'm guessing not, but maybe. I don't know.
Because it's so big, you know, only.
Yes, it would make it lighter.
Okay, so thanks very much. This is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd saying goodbye to Liz Thorpe, whose book, Book of Cheese, is a wonderful new addition to the cheese library.
Thanks, Diane.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.